Prem Shri Gosha Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrindakita Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kundiki Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhagavad Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrindakita Ki Jai Gaur Prema All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. She was on cyber jantam cyber tam sajinam cyber tam cyber to temper she has on the tacker she changed any day. She ran up, she put up cyber and I tell she was shaking with them still. Bunch of couple to this jacket, this is the other time for two. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, Conversation between Narada and Vyasa, Text 4. Prakalpa Vishayametam Smritim Te Muni Sattama Nayesha Vyavadat Kala Esa Sarva Nirakriti. Duration of Brahma's day. Vishayam, subject matter. Etam, all these. Smritim, remembrance. Te, your. Munisattama, O great sage. Na, not. He, certainly. Eshaha, all these. Vyavadat, made any difference. Kalaha, course of time. Eshaha, all these, sarva, all, nirakritihi, annihilation. Translation and purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. O great sage, time annihilates everything in due course. So how is it that this subject matter, which happened prior to this day of Brahma, is still fresh in your memory, undisturbed by time? Purport. As spirit is not annihilated even after the annihilation of the material body, so also spiritual consciousness is not annihilated. Sri Narada developed this spiritual consciousness even when he had his material body in the previous kalpa. Consciousness of the material body means spiritual consciousness expressed through the medium of a material body. This consciousness is inferior, destructible, and perverted. But super consciousness of the supra mind in the spiritual plane is as good as the spirit soul and is never annihilated. Prakalpa vishayam etam smittim tem nisattama na yesha vyakrihat kala esha sarva anirakriti. O great sage, time annihilates everything in due course, so how is it that this subject matter, which happened prior to the stay of Brahma, is still fresh in your memory, undisturbed by time? So this is very astonishing. Of course, this question reminds us of when Arjuna asked Krishna, how is it you instructed the sun god millions of years ago? And he's saying, how do you remember something that happened in the last kalpa? I mean, we have trouble remembering exactly what happened yesterday, right? Or even, you know, at 5 o'clock this afternoon, we'll have trouble remembering what happened this morning. So if you were to sit down at 5 o'clock this afternoon and try to replay the day going backwards, you really struggle everything that happened. And most of us don't remember our past lives, isn't it? But to speak of our past lives in another day of Brahma, we don't even remember everything from this life or from today. So how is it that Narada is remembering something from another kalpa? And can anyone tell me what... I gave you a little hint already. So where is it that would seem to contradict this, of Narada being able to remember his other life in another kalpa simply because he's in super consciousness with the supra mind? Where is something that would seem to say the opposite of that? Yes?
Krishna says to Arjuna that we've had many appearances previously, but I can't remember.
Yes. When Arjuna asked this question of Krishna, how is it you instructed the sun god? And then Krishna is indicating this was in another incarnation of myself. It wasn't in this incarnation. And he said, we've both had many lives, and I remember all of them, but you don't. And Srila Prabhupada, in that purport, makes the point that this is one difference between the Lord and the living entity. That the living entity, even a liberated living entity like Arjuna, is not going to remember everything, whereas the Lord is going to remember everything. But here it seems to say that you will remember everything. Now, of course, even in the spiritual world, does everybody remember everything? No, they don't. Right? It's explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that even in the... Is this okay with this? You want to change it? Do you want to change it again? Okay, you're asking him to fix it.
Is everyone okay with the sound? It's okay? Okay.
All right, so we'll leave it like that?
Yeah.
Okay. What? Okay, it's not going back there. So can you, we can, let us know if it's, do I need to speak louder? Will that help? Does that help? I speak, that's really pushing it. All right. So we find there in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumar explains how Krishna in the spiritual world goes to Mathura. Akura takes him to Mathura in the spiritual world, and then he comes back to Vrindavan. And he said after Krishna comes back to Vrindavan, after a while, they forget that he ever went to Mathura. It becomes to them like some sort of a bad dream, they think it was. And somebody will sometimes say to one another, did you have a bad dream about Krishna going to Mathura? Don't worry about it. And then Akura comes again and takes Krishna to Mathura again. And then this is happening over and over again. And every time it happens, they forget. That everything always appears very fresh. So there's a kind of forgetfulness that happens even there. Or even Krishna sometimes has a kind of forgetfulness. Right? Like the cowherd boys go into Agassara's mouth and he can't remember what he's supposed to do. He says, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to save my friends and kill the demon? Because, if your friends are inside the demon, usually if somebody dies, all the little bacteria inside their intestines also dies, yes? So the boys were all inside Agasura's mouth. They were inside Agasura's stomach, and Krishna wanted to kill Agasura without killing them. But he forgot. And of course, Krishna likes to forget. Is that better back then? Krishna likes to forget that he's God. He just completely forgets that he's God, and Mother Yasoda's chasing him with his stick, and he's crying. And it says, we say that Damodarsika is rubbing his eyes again and again with his two lotus hands. He's in fear. Oh, my mother's going to punish me. Right? And Kunti, who has knowledge of the Lord's opulence, she doesn't understand this. She says, you know, fear it personified is running away from you, and yet you're afraid of your mother because you're forgetting that you're God. Right? You're forgetting that you're God. And also Krishna forgets that he's supposed to go to Mathura. Narada Muni has to come and remind him. I just finished reading this section in Gopal Champu. How Narada Muni comes to tell Krishna, oh, you know, you have to go to Mathura now. You have all these pastimes that you have to do. He's reminding him of all of his pastimes. And Krishna keeps saying to Narada, will I ever come back to Vraja? Will I ever come back to Vraja? So we find that there's some sort of divine forgetfulness. Because it sounds like here that once you come to Krishna consciousness, you always remember everything eternally in all respects. But of course, when it comes to Leela, it's not like that. There's also remembrance and forgetfulness. Of course, we all have this idea that we want to remember, well, at least all the important things. That's why we take photographs, right? And while we may keep a diary or a journal, we make a mental note. Okay, I really want to remember this. Places that are advertising themselves as tourist destinations. They say, come here and build memories. Isn't it like that? Come, I know Disney World, they really push that. You know, this is where you're going to build your memories for a lifetime and things of that nature. And people will often ask, you know, well, why can't I remember my past life? And will I be able to remember this life and my next life? Because our identity in this life is really made up of our memories, isn't it? That's where we have our sense of self, is what I remember. So there's one devotee, I'm not sure if he's still in L.A., but one devotee in L.A., I might have told you, did I tell you this story about the devotee in L.A. with amnesia? Did I tell you that story before? So he was coming to the temple, and he really liked Krishna consciousness, but he was having a hard time giving up some of his material attachments. Not very surprising that people have a hard time giving up their material attachments. So he didn't know that much about Krishna consciousness. He saw a painting of Nrisimhadev, and he thought, oh, this is the right person to pray to, without knowing anything about Nrisimhadev. So he goes to Nrisimhadev, and he says, please remove all my material attachments so I can just surrender to Krishna. So that's a risky prayer to make, especially to Nrisimhadev. And a week later, he woke up on the side of the road, not knowing anything about his identity. He didn't know his name, he didn't know his family, he didn't know his background, he didn't know anything about where he was from. And soon after that, he again met the devotees, and he moved into the temple. You know? And he was just really happy. He was actually just really happy. He said it was a really good time for him because he had no baggage from his life. But later on, his spiritual master, Prahlada Nandaswami, said to him, you know, you really should try to revive your memory and find out who you were. So on that basis, he made some endeavor. And he said gradually, over a period of time, he was able to remember everything except for that week between his prayer to Nrisimhadev and his waking up on the side of the road. He said he's never been able to remember that part. And he said in some ways it was better forgetting everything. But what was really fascinating in this regard is that when he lost his memories, he lost his identity. He couldn't remember his name, he couldn't remember his family. Right? That's what we're very afraid of at death. That's what's scary about death, that we lose our identity. Because that's what we've invested in this life. You know, I always like in the pastime of Krishna in Kaliya, when Krishna's in Kaliya's coils, and the residents of Vrindavan are practically dying with anxiety. And it's explained, Srila Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, that the reason they were going unconscious was they had invested everything in Krishna. You know, sometimes we hear about people who make big investments in the stock market, and when their investments do badly, they commit suicide. It happens sometimes. This is where they put all their hopes, their dreams. This is my source of everything. If I lose this, I lose everything. So in conditioned life, we invest everything in our identity. We used to have a drama that we performed sometimes at the Sunday feast, early in the movement, before there was mass available entertainment in the world. We used to perform dramas pretty much every Sunday. And most of them were little philosophical skits. We used to do this at Harinam too. We do like little street dramas at Harinam. And one of them was called The Wrong Bank Account, where this man, every week, he'd get his paycheck and he would put a portion into the bank. And then when he was ready to retire, he went, you know, he's got all this money that he saved up. He goes to the bank and they said, there's nothing here. Well, how is that? He said, you've been putting it into someone else's account. So, you know, we all of our life, we're investing our energy, our shakti, we're investing it into our material identity. We're investing it into the care of this body. This body requires a lot of care just to walk around and function. We're investing it into our mind, into our knowledge, our education, our relationships, our possessions, and so forth and so on. And death is terrifying to us because then we lose our identity. We have to start off fresh with it. All the memories are gone. Right? In this life, you could know 10 languages, and the next birth, you're just saying goo goo gang gang again. And you could have, you know, written 100 books on the topic of the one-tailed horsefly or something, you know. And in your next life, you don't know anything about anything. Everything's gone, and you don't even know who you are. And this is why we're so terrified of death. We're not really terrified of death just in changing the body. We've been changing our body so many times. That's not a very terrifying thing. Or Krishna compares it to changing clothes, you know. We don't become terrified of changing our clothes. That's not a big deal. Walking from one room to the other, going to another place, like tomorrow going to America. So I'm not like, oh my God, I'm going to go to another country. So that's not the thing that makes death frightening to us. What makes death frightening to us is that we lose our identity. We have to start all over again, you know, who am I? Who am I? And figuring out who you are. And this is a big thing people ask in every particular life. Who am I? What's my nature? What am I about? What am I good at? What am I bad at? You know, if you want to talk to people about themselves, they're very attentive. Your astrology, your palmistry, whatever. What is your identity? And these memories that are connected with our temporary identity, they do become lost. Because, as Prabhupada's saying here, through the medium of a material body, it's just inferior, destructible, and perverted. The identity is connected with that body only and that life only, and it does become lost. Of course, it does say in the Bhagavatam also that the fortunate spirit soul in the womb remembers their previous 100 births and grieves piteously. So that memory isn't even a nice one. One remembers all the mistakes that one has made, all the time that one has wasted, all the foolishness, all the things one invested in that got destroyed. Oh, I invested in this life and it got destroyed. I invested in this life and it got destroyed. It's kind of like remembering that you built up a big business and then it all failed, and then you built another business and it failed, another business and it failed, another business and it failed. So this tendency to want to have some stable identity, some stable sense of self into which we can invest and which endures, this desire not to lose our memories and not to lose our sense of self, right? Even in this life, I think we all have some fear of getting Alzheimer's or dementia, isn't it? If the doctor comes to you and says, you know, you have the early stages of Alzheimer's, who's going to say, oh, jai, Krishna? Yeah. So not even death, but even in this life. So we have this desire to hold on to some sense of self and something permanent. Right? This desire is coming from the fact that we have a permanent identity. I mean, even if in the scope of lila, one may forget that Krishna went to Mathura or just for the sake of enjoyment of the pastimes, one never loses one's sense of identity. And one never loses one's memory of one's relationship with Krishna. And that is one's sthaibhav. Sthai means to stay. And Prabhupada translates sthaibhav in the Nectar Devotion as permanent ecstasy or continuous ecstasy. It's that which doesn't it doesn't leave. You know, in this life, I'm so-and-so's daughter, and so-and-so's this, and so. But that's temporary. You know, in my last life, the person who's my father in this life might have been my brother in another life, or something like that. It's not a permanent relationship. But in spiritual life, we have a permanent relationship with Krishna, with Radharani, with Mother Yasoda, with Nanda Maharaj, or with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with all the residents of Vrindavan, or maybe with Ramachandra. These are permanent relationships that we have, and permanent sense of identity. And this permanent sense of identity, like Arjuna, he didn't remember some specifics of his previous life, but he certainly remembered his relationship with Krishna. He certainly remembered, Krishna is my friend. That he always remembered, that basic sense of identity. I am Krishna's friend. Maybe sometimes it's as Naranarayan, and sometimes it's as Krishna and Arjuna. But he doesn't forget that. And everything he's pouring into that relationship with Krishna, he gets to keep, even when he moves from one lifetime to another. I mean, even in one sense, even if we haven't yet realized our Sai Baba, if we haven't yet realized I'm Krishna's gopi friend or I'm Krishna's cowherd boyfriend. So it's explained that anything that we invest in our relationship with Krishna, we do keep. Just like I'm sure that many of us in this life, even if we weren't born in devotee families, we had something that was still there from our Krishna consciousness from another life. Isn't it a fact? Right? Who here feels pretty sure they had some connection with Krishna consciousness in another life? I mean, I remember being at New Vrindavan at the Festival of Inspiration, there were like 300 devotees there. I asked this question and 90% of the devotees raised their hand. I mean, I remember as a little girl, I was 4 years old. Do we have any 4-year-olds here in the room? Any kids here who were 4? Any of the children in the back there who were 4? Oh, there you go, okay. So when I was 4, I remember going to my mother and saying, why do we follow our religion? She says, because it's my mother's religion. I said, well, why does she follow it? She says, because it's her mother's religion. And I said, why does she follow it? She says, because little children ask these sort of questions. On and on, why, you know? And then I said, well, that's really dumb. I said, we should follow a religion because it's true, not just because everybody's mommy did it. And I mean, I remember I was 4, and I said, I'm going to find God. And people would ask me, what do you want to do in your life? And I said, I just want to find God. I said, I don't care about a career, I don't care about a family, I just want to find God. So that was there at a very young age, and I think many devotees have this experience. Srila Ramaraj tells the story that when he first got Krishna book, he read the stories and he went to his mother, and he said, Mother, did you tell me these stories when I was a child? She said, I know all of them. I already, as soon as I read them, I know that I know all of them. And his mother said, no, I never heard them before. So this kind of thing, even if we're not mature in Krishna consciousness, even if we're not at the level of Arjuna where we're remembering, you know, I'm Krishna's eternal friend in the spiritual world from one life to another, we do keep this. We do keep whatever we have achieved in Krishna consciousness. And we keep this even if we get dementia in this life. And one of my god sisters who died, I guess, in the last year, so she had a stroke which destroyed all of her memory. But she was the only thing, she couldn't even speak anymore except that she was always chanting Hare Krishna. And that she remembered. And she was just absorbed in the Hare Krishna mantra. So that we keep. So our real question should be, what am I investing in? I mean, obviously, we have to wash our clothes and we have to feed our body. We have to invest some energy in the temporary things that we don't really have an option. You know, you can't really say, okay, well, I'm only going to be interested in the eternal, so I'm going to stop brushing my teeth. You know, I'm going to stop washing my clothes. Of course, there are great avadutas in the Shastra who did that kind of thing, who just wandered around without bathing, like Jed Bharat, right? He wasn't even bathing. And when the dacoits captured him, and he was all dirty, they thought he was just a mentally, you know, defective person. And even when Maharaj Rahuguna engaged Jed Bharat in carrying the palanquin, he was so dirty, his Brahmin thread was black. So there are some avadutas who actually do neglect everything with the body completely. But we're not asked to do that in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching mission. That's not our ticket to the spiritual world is based on being preachers. And like Robin said, first dress, then address. You know, so we're not going to be preachers wearing, you know, dreadlocks and torn clothes and black Brahmin threads. That's not our mission. But at least on the emotional level, on the attachment level, on the desire level, we should be investing in that which is eternal. We should be investing in the real, not in the false. And not investing in the false even in the name of service. We did an interesting exercise. I can't remember if it was a japa retreat or a Govardhan retreat with Burjan Prabhu, where he listed a number of things and had us rate our emotional responses, either negative or positive, on a scale of 1 to 5. You know, our family, our country, our body, all these different things in the world. And he was saying, you know, why are there any 4 or 5s on this list? Why are there any things in this world that we have some strong emotional investment in? So our emotional investment should be only in the eternal. Now then we can ask, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that I become cold-hearted? And of course there's one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, one of those purports where you kind of gasp, say, what is Prabhupada saying here in this purport? Where he says, even one should be callous at the death of a near relative. You've read that purport? Did any of you gasp when you read that? And say, what is Srila Prabhupada asking? Because bhakti is not about being hard-hearted. Hard-heartedness is not the natural position of the soul, and it can't be maintained. That's what the jnanis are trying for, the karma yogis and the jnani yogis. They're trying to become hard-hearted, to cut off all of their feelings. But no, it's something quite different, that one becomes neutral to any sort of thing separate from Krishna. This morning I was hearing Srila Prabhupada say that when you really love Krishna, when you give Krishna all of your emotions, then you love everyone. He said you won't even want a tree to be cut down. Prabhupada was going on and on in this class about how sad he was for the trees. You know, I was thinking that sometimes we are preaching to people about how they should be vegetarian and they should care about the cows and the pigs and the chicken and the goats. I mean, you don't see very often even devotees talking about the trees. You know, you should talk about, you know, why are you cutting down all the trees to print these useless newspapers? Even now with digital newspapers, I think still they're printing the New York Times on paper and cutting down 17 acres of forest every Sunday just to print this paper about this politician said this and this war is going on and this movie star got divorced for the 10th time or whatever. And we're not usually protesting this kind of thing. Or like Prabhupada said, using pesticides is forbidden, you know, artificial pesticides. And we're not usually protesting that. You know, all the poor little buggies that are being killed. You know, Prabhupada saw a little bug once in his room. And he called Shruti Kirti in and he said, you know, please put this bug outside, he must be hungry. And the non-devotees are not like that. I've told this story before. When I was in graduate school, the students were giving a presentation. And there was a group of students, and then one of the women at the front, she said, oh, there's a spider! And she steps on it, and she said, not anymore. And I thought, you'd never see a devotee do something like that. It was so shocking to me, you know. No one else in the class reacted, but I was sort of traumatized for the rest of the class that she'd stepped on a spider in front of everybody. So when we say that the devotee doesn't invest emotionally in the external temporary relationships of this world, we don't mean that they become callous in the sense of being hard-hearted. Just like when Queen Kunti, when she said, you know, please sever my tie of affection from my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Rishnis, and Prabhupada comments that her kinsmen were all devotees, and, you know, we're supposed to be attached to devotees. I mean, Prabhupada told my father, said, I'm coming to the temple not to see Krishna, but to see my daughter and son-in-law. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, yes, they are loving Krishna. And I was thinking, well, I don't love Krishna. He said, chanting and dancing are symptoms of loving Krishna. So they are loving Krishna and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. So you become attached to a devotee and you go back to Godhead. Right? Yasya prasada bhagava prasada. So why is Kunti asking to sever her tie of affection for her kinsman? Prabhupada said she wanted to sever it on the material platform, not being attached as Arjuna was on the battlefield, Swajana, these are my people to enjoy. The material affection is this is my family, my country, my this, my that, for me to enjoy. These are my objects of enjoyment. That is material attachment. And we become disappointed when we invest everything in our objects of enjoyment and frankly they fail to give us the enjoyment that we wanted. We become very disappointed. Isn't it like that? And you can invest, this is an important point, you can invest materially in something that is intrinsically spiritual and you can invest spiritually in something that seems to be material. Just like Prabhupada says, there can be professional Bhagavatam reciters, yes? He says, don't hear from the professional Bhagavatam reciters. There's professional kirtaneers. They just do it as their job. Okay, I'm doing a kirtan, I'm singing reading the Bhagavatam as my job. I get paid for it, and my real interest is the football game on the television. Like Prabhupada said, they'll leave this kirtan and they'll be crying, and then they want to smoke a cigarette. Sometimes we see this as a warning. Sometimes we see devotees invest in that way, in their devotee relationships in ISKCON, even in their guru. They see, oh, ISKCON is a place where I'm going to get my needs met, like it's their mundane family. You understand? Like the way an ordinary person thinks of their family. I'll work hard for my family, and my family will give me everything I need. They'll have my back. They'll be there for me. And then they just transfer the same material conception to ISKCON, or to their guru, or to the temple president. We see this in devotee marriages, where people think, oh, I've married a devotee, now they're really going to meet all of my needs. You know, they have even higher material expectations. So one can approach even devotional things in that material way. One can approach Krishna, Krishna, you're my order supplier, you're here to meet my needs. I'm investing in you because I want to get something back for myself. So that's the kind of attachment that Kunti's asking to sever. She's saying, please sever any attachment like that. Let me not invest in those things which are perishable and unsatisfying. Let me not think, you know, this is my brahmachari ashram that's going to be the source of my happiness and strength. And so I'm going to invest everything in the ashram and I'm going to invest everything in... You will be disappointed. You will be crushed and you'll be devastated and you'll be bitter. And we see it happen to devotees. I'm sure all of you have met some devotee like that, and if you haven't, you will. You'll meet somebody who's been around for 10, 20 years and then they just get bitter and angry. You know, I gave everything to ISKCON, I gave everything to the ashram, I sacrificed the best years of my life, and what did I get? So that we don't want to have that. And just things that will be lost in time, and something that could never satisfy us. But one can be invested spiritually in taking care of a bug, yes? What to speak of your family and your brahmacharya ashram and your guru and your temple and his. If Prabhupada can have a spiritual investment in taking care of a bug, then we can have a spiritual investment in taking care of everything. But spiritual investment means I'm working for Krishna's happiness. My happiness is in Krishna's happiness. Because I love Krishna, therefore I actually love the other brahmacharis, therefore I actually love my guru, therefore I actually love my wife, my husband, my children, the bug on the leaf outside. Because it's an expression of my fullness of connection with Krishna, and that is eternal. That stays. That feeling of love for the little bug in your room is still there, even if you never see the bug again. It's still part of you. It's something eternal. It's something meaningful. Whereas our attachment to anybody in terms of our just material sense gratification, it only leads to disappointment and frustration. And it doesn't last. Even if there's some little drop of water in the desert in that relationship, it's just kamala dalajala jivanatam. One can't hold on to it. It's gone. So the super consciousness of the super mind in the spiritual plane, that is the consciousness that we are trying to develop. That is where we want to put our attention. And that we get to keep. That has meaning, it expands, and we keep it. It's ours forever. And it keeps getting more and more and more. Imagine an investment like that. Imagine an investment where the stock never goes down. Huh? In the world, there's no such thing. No such thing. Right? The companies that were the top, they become the bottom. The countries that are the top, they become the bottom. Spain was once the ruler of the world. What is it now? Sorry, any people from Spain, if I offended you. We were all once great demigods, yes? Every one of us was Lord Brahma of some universe. I'm sure we've all been Indras and Chandras and Suryas and where is it now? Some wealthy king or queen or whatever. Love of so many people. So many people cared about us. Meaningless. Who cares? Why not invest in something which is solid and something that stays forever? So that we should be asking ourselves. Where is my attachment? Where is my investment? Where am I putting my shakti? Am I doing it in something which is inferior, destructible, and perverted? Or the super consciousness of the super mind, which is as good as the soul and is never annihilated? So I have a little cold, so I'm sorry my voice is not so good today. Anybody has any questions or comments or corrections? Yes, please. Oh, that's such a good question. Why when people, and if two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other, if Prabhupada told my father to be attached to me, and obviously his attachment to me was going to be mundane, why would that attachment to me from my father purify him, whereas when devotees become attached to ISKCON and devotees in an improper way, it doesn't, if they become bitter? That's a very good question. You know, my father's attachment to me did become about Krishna. It didn't stay mundane. I wasn't able to be with him when he died. I got there 2 hours too late. But the last thing he said before he went unconscious is that he was waiting for me to come. And he said, "Tell her she was always my favorite, and whenever I think about her, I think about Krishna." You know, in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, we can make advancement even if we're very contaminated. But at a certain point, we're expected to go beyond that. In the beginning, we can come just looking for something material, or relief from distress, or some happiness in the material world, or to fulfill our curiosity. And that's okay. You're allowed to be a neophyte when you're a neophyte. You're allowed to be a baby when you're a baby. We know it. Hopefully we don't criticize the babies for being babies. Sometimes the devotees criticize the babies for being babies, but we shouldn't do that. It's not very reasonable. You know, but if you're still acting like a little baby when you're 4 years old, you're still acting like an infant when you're four, you're still acting like a four-year-old when you're 40, you know, then that's a problem. And Jiva Goswami talks about what happens, hopefully I can remember this, Jiva Goswami talks about what happens if one doesn't progress. If one intentionally stays on the neophyte platform. Like Prabhupada said, if one doesn't want to purify one's heart, that's another thing. And Jiva Goswami says, he says, you become crooked, faithless, attached to things that destroy your faith in Krishna. There's five. You get proud of your mundane achievements in devotional service. Get rid of the other. So we're supposed to progress in Krishna consciousness. We're supposed to take our attachments from the material to the spiritual. We're supposed to go from mechanical chanting to chanting with the mind and the heart and the intention. We're supposed to go from offensive to inoffensive chanting. Like Prabhupada would often say at initiations, you know, it's expected you start chanting on the offensive platform, but you should try to give up those offenses. Don't intentionally stay on that platform. So why does one become crooked? One becomes crooked because and cheating and pretentious because you're going on in Krishna consciousness, but you're not really getting anywhere. It's like you're just idling your car in one place. So you start pretending you're more advanced than you are. And then faithless, you lose your faith, which is this bitterness, because it's not working. Because you're apparently chanting and you're apparently doing the process, but you're not really doing the process, so you lose your faith. You say it doesn't work. Oh, the other one is slackness in the process. That's the other one. Thank you, Krishna. So, mitasmatir ganamapokanamchari. We could talk about that too. How Krishna gives memory. So then you get attached to things which destroy your faith in Krishna because you want to justify your lack of faith. You want to say, well, the reason that it's not working is because there's something wrong with the process, not because there's something wrong with me. So you start becoming attached to people who are also faithless and attached to activities that destroy your faith. And then you're not really strict about the process anymore because you've lost your faith in it. But if you're still staying in the process to some extent, you become proud of your devotional achievements. And you can see this symptom also. People who become very bitter and frustrated, they tend to brag about all the things they've done externally in Krishna consciousness. If you notice, these things go together, and it's quite fascinating. The people will tell you, you know, but I distributed so many books and I opened this temple. And have you met people like this? You know, if you haven't, you will. I did this and I did that. They give you a list like they're applying for a job. You know, when they're giving you their resume and their CV. I had this accomplishment. And so I must be an advanced devotee because I'm progressing in this way. So we are expected to become deep. We are expected to become real. We are expected to purify. And if you stay on the... It's called Prakriti Bhakta. Prakriti Bhakta. This is the Kanista devotee. It's also called a Prakriti Bhakta. Prakriti means materialistic. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that really you can't call these people devotees at all. They're really materialists. They're not really devotees. He said, but we call them Prakriti Bhaktas because the only way you can advance is by sadhu sangha. And the devotees are told, don't asat sangha tyaga, don't associate with the materialists. So if you put the word Prakriti Bhaktas, so the advanced devotees will associate with it. Because that's their only hope to grow up. But we don't want to stay on that. So I see people become frustrated when they stay. They don't progress. To be there is all right. We don't say having material attachments is an offense. We say maintaining material attachments is an offense. To maintain material attachments, right? Not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and to maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So that we walk in the door with material attachments is expected. We don't expect people walk in the door already as prema bhaktas. I mean, that would be kind of cool. And then I guess we would just have ecstatic kirtans like at the house of Srivas Thakur, and that would be our whole movement. You know? So that's expected. But one should be wanting to become purified. It was interesting. I had an interesting discussion with a devotee about anarta nivritti. This devotee came to me with the problems they were going through. We were talking about getting rid of anartas, and the devotee said to me, oh, I feel like for the first time I really want to get rid of my anartas. So we have to want to get rid of them. Without fear. That if I spiritualize my relationships, not to become fearful, I'll become, you know, hard-hearted, and I won't have any joy in my life anymore because I won't care about anybody. Is that all right? That was a very good question. Thank you. I love questions like that. Anybody else have a question or comment? Yes, brother.
Thank you for the class. I was wondering, do you have any good guidelines for distinguishing between service that's being materially motivated?
How do you know whether your service is materially motivated or it's really spiritual? How do you feel when the other person lets you down is a really good guideline. That tells you what you were serving for. So if I'm doing a lot for you and you didn't even notice that I did it, and that really bothers me, and if it is eating at me, then my motives are wrong. I was doing it to get something from you rather than to get something from Krishna, rather than to please Krishna. So that's a really good key. That's one of your evidence procedures. You know, I could also be, what are you thinking about? Well, if I do this, I'll get this. If I do this, I'll get that. If I do this, I'll get this. If I do this, I'll get that. But it's especially how you feel when you don't get it. You can also go by how you feel when you do get it. You know, do you swim in it? Oh, you're so great. Here's your plate of Mahaprasada in front of all the devotees. And just reminding me, let's see, what year would this be? 79, maybe? Maybe 1979. I think. Maybe it was 78. It was 78 or 79. And I was in the New York temple, and for the Christmas marathon, I was going out and distributing books. Sometime I had a little baby, so I couldn't go out as much as everybody else, but I was still going out regularly. And one time I got, they would announce every day the book scores, and so one time I got a really big book score. That didn't happen to me very often, but anyway, it happened to me one time, and you know, they call me up and they give me a big maha plate in front of all the devotees, and you know, and I sat down, and the first thing I thought when I sat down is, they never say that for my other service. You know, nobody ever calls me at the front and say, you know, Irma changed 10 poopy nappies today, hurry bull. And I felt really awful. I'm thinking, you know, the other thing that I'm doing, nobody is ever acknowledging it. Nobody ever says anything about it. So that's a good evidence procedure that I was doing it for the wrong reason. You follow? You understand? It can happen when you're praised also. Or if you do, let's get into it. Yes, finally people are acknowledging me. Finally they're noticing all my sacrifice and all my tapasya and all my dedication and... Or if ever your mind thinks, you know, I chant my 16 rounds every day, nobody ever thanks me for it. Nobody even notices, nobody cares. They just assume I'm gonna chant my rounds every day. I've been chanting my rounds every day, you know, now for 10 years, 15, 20 years, following the principles. Nobody even cares. What am I doing it for? Those are good evidence procedures. Those are little signposts. You're on the wrong road. Wrong way. Turn back. Anybody else? Thank you very much. I'm very grateful for all of your hospitality here in Auckland. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.